Welcome to Church Drunk, a spirited conversation about faith, reason, and libations. Welcome, welcome to the second episode of our summer season.
Yeah.
Before we roll into treasure hunting and legend seeking, a few things.
It's a very exciting week.
It's super exciting. It's adventure week here at Church Drunk. Any adventure of ours, though, will include some swearing.
Yes.
Adult language is par for the course.
Right.
As well as, mild blasphemy.
I feel like we might be light on the blasphemy tonight.
This book is pretty much like New Age bullshit blasphemy, that's implied.
That's a valid point. I guess the whole thing will be blasphemy.
But I'm going to argue against that.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But it could happen. You've been warned.
Right.
And of course, we're measuring blasphemy by Holy Mother Roman Catholic Church, because we're a Catholic, but you don't have to be.
If you think that yoga is a sin, you might want to go elsewhere tonight for your
and
podcast.
Always?
Or today. Whatever time of day you're listening to it.
Well, that's all the heads ups we can possibly provide. You should know by now if this is your particular brand of stupid. We are going to be drinking as usual here on Church Drunk. And I am Dizzy, joined by guests. And guess what are you sipping?
I've had a brown liquor kind of day.
Oh, dear.
So I'm drinking a little bit of brown liquor.
Is that as far as you'd like to describe
it? Any distinguishing marks beyond that is lost. Although I did garnish it with a bit of Thai basil because I happen to have that.
Because you're a fancy fellow.
Yeah.
Even on a brown liquor day.
Throw some brown liquor in with some Thai basil, and I threw a cherry in to make me feel like it's a great day.
Those are pretty good cherries. Yeah.
So there you go.
All right.
What about you? What are you drinking?
Okay. All right. We'll go straight to me. I am drinking a fancy drink that Guest was kind enough to throw together when I said, I want mint, because mint tea is part of our story.
Yes.
So this actually ended up tasting sort of like a better version of a mint alcoholic drink. So we have rum.
Yes.
Sour apple liqueur, actual mints like the herb.
Yes.
Muddled in there. Over some ice and with a fizzy water floater, and my fizzy water happened to be of the berry variety.
And I feel like the berries maybe helped some of the mint tea characteristics for one reason or another.
It's also brown, but tastes fruity and summery, and I garnished it with these fancy hipster fucking maraschino cherries.
They're called Amarena cherries.
Oh,
which I just remembered
now
because we
were
trying to think of it.
Look how you led me on. Yeah, guess the guy. I don't remember what those called. And I said, they're hipster fucking cherries. Like maraschino cherries, but not bright red.
But fancy. Yeah.
They taste delicious. You could probably just eat the whole jar and be super sick.
Yeah, no, it would make you definitely sick to your stomach.
Yeah, so I don't know if you could call either of those a cocktail recommendation, but if you're having any kind of rough time, you should drink some brown liquor.
Yeah.
And if you're not, and it's summer, you should drink some fruity things.
Yeah. Your destiny lies in brown liquor cocktails.
Where your cocktail is, there also is your heart.
Oh, look at you going.
Oh, I'm
going to
go deep in
us.
This, Quello.
Yeah.
All right. So we're in our summer reading series. If you've been listening to the last couple ones, you know we've chosen some books and we're highlighting one each time. You don't have to pick up in any particular order, but if you're just tuning in today to the summer session, we're talking about Paulo Coelho. Quintessential classic.
Yes.
The Alchemist.
Ultimate graduation book.
It really, really is. I'm sure millions of these are sold every May, June, July time to gift to the young people before life has fully squelched them.
One of the most widely translated books.
Oh.
So from the original Portuguese, because Paulo Coelho was Brazilian.
I think he's still with us.
Well, at the time that he wrote it, he was Brazilian.
He hasn't switched
for all I know,
nationalities
he's
yet.
He's Canadian now. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yes.
The untold Paulo Coelho story.
Paulo Coelho is from Brazil,
okay.
And he wrote this book back in the 80s, and it's been translated from the original Brazilian Portuguese.
Nice.
I don't want to, discriminate.
No, it was my fault. I got in your way there.
Brasilo Portuguese is what I would call it, but then again, I don't speak Portuguese, so that might be an important fact to include.
I'm already lost. But this anyway, book, it can be read in English.
International success. Yes. It's been translated into more languages than any other book. It was in the Guinness Book of World Records for the most widely translated book.
The Bible?
See, that's where I feel like that's fucking total lies. Bullshit. Like, yes. I feel like the Guinness Book of World Records sometimes lies to us. But anyway.
Okay.
Or maybe Wikipedia was lying to me when I looked up that
statistic.
There
we go. Yeah. All right. So this book is supremely popular. Yes. And it's not without its detractors and its controversies. And we are going to try to address some of that as to why we still chose it and maybe why we like it.
Right. And as with all of our summer reading list podcasts, there will be some mild spoilers. So it's a short book. If you haven't read it yet and you're interested in checking it out and you don't want any spoilers, go read it and then come back to this episode. It's worth checking out, and it doesn't take long.
It's such an easy read, and I think it's worth reading cold. So if you haven't read it, don't listen to us. Go read it yourself.
Yeah,
and then you can, have your own opinion.
All that being said,
yes,
the book is about what?
Chasing your dreams, right? Following your bliss, all these horrible things that we gag.
So many different ways that you can answer that question. Because I would say the book is about a shepherd named Santiago.
Oh, would you?
Who is on a journey, right? But it is. It's about chasing your dreams. It's about a shepherd named Santiago. It's about all of these things, which is why people love to read it and kind of interpret it in whatever way they see fit.
And I thought this book was a good pick for our summer series because it is such a, graduation book. And that's kind of this time of year, most people know graduates or have been one or are one at that point. So I do think it is good to have some, positive, sincere, earnest inspiration in your life. As much as I truly love sarcasm and pessimism even or realism or whatever sometimes – it's really great to have, but you know what? Don't lose your dreams. Keep your eyes up. Right. Keep your hopes up. Because look at how things could turn out.
And at the same time, full disclosure, it might be an awful book. There are plenty of people out there who say, it might be horrible. So we're going to kind of explore both of those facets
of it. But why we like it.
Yeah, first. I think we'll start with the things that we enjoyed about it. And you and I actually reached this book at different phases of our lives. Read it early on, I read it much later, and that has informed how we think about it. So when did you read it? What did you like about it?
Okay, so it was given to me in entering high school by an older family member, or older than me but still a young person, who really liked it. So that was kind of cool. Somebody who I thought was super cool gave me the book. And I like to read, so I really loved it from that age, 13 or 14. Mm-hmm. I totally ate it up.
And it's a very accessible book. You can read it in junior high and really be able to get after it. So anytime after, I would say fifth or sixth grade, give this book to somebody.
It's simple words and phrasing. I will argue that I do still think there is deep wisdom in it. So
for sure.
Why I liked this book at that age was the adventure, the positivity of it. It is about a young person, the main character, whose perspective you follow is a young guy, early teens, but he's kind of independent. And I think when you're that age, you're thinking about where is my life going to go and who am I going to be?
Yes.
Now, I don't buy into everything that the book might say about philosophy or how things turn out, but I do think there are some really good life lessons in it.
Yeah.
So one of the ones that I just like those little vignette stories from his journey that kind of teach a lesson.
So the basic premise of the story is that there is this shepherd, Santiago, and he has a dream, a vision where he feels there's something that draws him to Egypt. Yeah.
Even before that, he just wants to kind of go do things.
Yeah.
And off. And his dad's all right.
Sort of the proverbial
prodigal son, take it off.
Big fish in a small pond. Yeah. Like ready to go explore. And there's something that draws him to Egypt where he thinks he's going to find this great treasure. Mm-hmm. So he's seeking this actual physical, tangible treasure.
Totally.
And he takes off on this journey. And meets a variety of characters, meets a woman that he, falls in love with, meets these wise masters, and the title comes from the alchemist that he meets that is, giving him direction and helping him on this journey. And it's all about this, sort of single-minded pursuit that turns out to be part of like a much larger perspective. You know, like you can pursue your dreams, you can look for that one thing.
Yeah.
But as soon as you broaden your perspectives, you'll start to understand that the world is informing you and giving you a lot of treasures that are not necessarily always at the end of your mm-hmm. journey, you know?
Okay.
So that's kind of like the basic nutshell yeah. premise of the book. But
what about you, though? What do you like about it? When did you come to
it? I read it when I was out of college or maybe end of college, you know? So I had, you know, heard about it, read about it, and ended up picking up a copy of it and reading it and being like, this is really good. Like, and I think I read it twice. And the second yeah. time that I was reading it, I was on vacation and I ended up giving it to a family member of mine and never saw my first copy of it ever again, you know? But it's one of those books where it's like you always pick up copies to yeah, hand out to totally. People or to give away presents or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's definitely a rereadable book. Mm-hmm. But for me, like, coming to it a little bit later in life than you yeah. did, right? Having kind of gone through high school and college and then reading the book, it was a little different perspective for two reasons. One being that, like, I think I was a little bit more cynical when mm-hmm. I read it. I was kind of like, oh, well, yeah. Like, there's this classic line in the book that, like, whatever your dreams are, whatever it is that your heart most desires, the universe will conspire to, like, bring it about, to give it to you. So basically, if you wish hard enough, things
good things
will
happen. That's not exactly what it says, but yes, I see where that comes from.
It's the issue that people take.
Okay.
And I think I was a little bit more open yeah. to taking issue with that at the time that I read it than
sure.
maybe you were. Because, you know, like, I've closed my eyes and wish hard for a lot of things
yeah.
that didn't really happen. I'm not going to name those things
okay.
necessarily
all
that
right.
I wished for that didn't
just
happen.
Just sip your brown liquor.
You know,
let
the destruction of certain orange politicians might make the list.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. If all I had to do
right.
was close my eyes
yeah.
and wish the whole world.
Just
anyway.
Lightning bolts,
no,
whatever.
But you know, the book actually doesn't say like that necessarily because Santiago often doesn't get what he
right.
necessarily wants.
It's not
and
in what he's closing his eyes and wishing
yeah.
him for form.
The lesson I like from that part about like, you know, the universe is conspiring to help you. It's kind of like open your eyes and look for opportunities because they're going to be along
yes.
the way. And there's this whole theory of it where like if you keep ignoring them long enough, they'll stop coming.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the warning that does happen to us in adulthood. Like Santiago's a little guy, you
yeah.
know, like you know, young teenager. But if you keep not looking for opportunities, if you keep just keeping your eyes like on the ground and you miss all this stuff, well, that's your own fault is
right.
kind of the message.
Yeah.
Which I do agree with. Like if you're not looking, you're certainly not finding.
For sure. And I remember reading it for the first time and thinking that like someone who wrote with such sort of single-minded clarity
mm-hmm.
about the way that they see the world and the way that in some respect, like the world sees them, you know, like
yeah.
they were like, I think Paulo Coelho is an author who expands out his worldview to think more about, gosh, what is my place? You know? And I think it's an easy thing when you're writing a book to get so hung up on your story,
yeah.
you know, like what are the details and the characters
yeah.
and this and that. And he's not really concerned with any of that. He's concerned with the bigger picture.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a fun thing to just lose yourself in from time to time.
I think he's a deceptively better author than you might believe if
yeah.
you just read this book.
Right.
Because the words are very, very simple, and it's a very simply told story. And simple is actually kind of hard to do.
For sure.
To still paint a picture and really tell the story. So, I I've read a couple other things of him. I think he's actually got, like, an elegant style in some of his writings.
He does.
This doesn't really show that really well, except if you look that there is clarity and simplicity, and
right.
that's why so many people have been drawn to it.
And this is the first book that he got a lot of recognition for.
Mm-hmm.
So Coelho has become a very well-known name, particularly among, like, a lot of the sort of new world kind of, like,
new age.
Hippy-dippy.
Yeah.
Yeah, new world. Makes it sound like it's post-Columbus.
Welcome to the Americas! Paulo Coelho! Christopher Columbus says, I did follow my personal legend. Ta-da!
Absolutely. You just wish hard enough, and all of a sudden, the Nina and the Pinta and the Santa Maria, they take you straight to India.
You
right?
didn't know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anywho.
Okay.
So he has become very well known.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found out in doing a little bit of digging for this was that, number one, The Alchemist flopped. Like, when he first got it published, the publisher dropped it pretty much right away because the book didn't sell. Okay. And this is, again, in Brazil.
Sure.
And he went to another publisher. And according to him, he knocked on the door of this big-name Brazilian publisher and said, I have a book, and it failed, but I think it's going to succeed. And the publisher said, yes, this shall succeed. Let us publish it.
Sight unseen or unread.
Because guess what? If you really want something to happen, the universe will conspire to make it happen. So I think maybe it's a little bit self-serving, that narrative. But it's an interesting fact that the book did not succeed right off the bat, and it has, in the sort of second iteration of it, become one of the most popular books, like, around the world.
Well, and the things about it that I like, I think, are things that especially do help young people in their kind of quest for, like, finding jobs or career paths or vocations, whatever you want to label that. And the reason I wanted the tea drink, because it's actually one of my favorite little parts of the book, where little Santiago is working in a tea shop because he's landed somewhere with no money. He's kind of gotten off track. And this guy, like, gives him a job, like, cleaning these mint tea glasses. So he's, like, Morocco or somewhere. I don't know where he is.
Well, he was going to Egypt. So he would probably be, like going into from Andalusia.
Geographia is not
across northern Africa. So yeah, it could be Morocco or, like, Libya, so places like that, like, moving across northern Africa.
Right. So he kind of gets comfortable in this tea glass cleaning job. He's making some money.
Yep.
And he's like, why actually should I continue chasing my legend? Like, I'm pretty comfortable here. And I think almost everybody can relate to that moment where you're like, maybe I should just be happy in what I'm doing. And there's this wisdom in the book where they're like, you know what? You know how to do this now, though. Like, you can always come back and, like, clean these glasses because you know how to do that. And I think that's such a, like, great lesson that I definitely reminded myself of at times in my development. Like, you know what? You know how to do this thing, so don't be so afraid to leave it.
Right.
So that's one of the little lessons I like.
And it is one of the beautiful points in the book, you know, to be like, hey, like, you have mastered this, and it's really time to challenge yourself, like let it go and move on. And it's a very Buddhist moment, you know, like, to say, okay, this has served me to this point. Am I actually, like spiritually ready to let go of this comfortable place to be able to move on to the next stage?
With the comfort that you really could come back. Like, there's something very freeing in that. Like, I don't have to hang on to it so much right here because it's mine.
Right. Well, I mean, and there's that, the sort of classic Buddhist parable of someone who, you know, uses a raft to cross a river, and are they going to carry the raft with them forever, or do you leave it at the bank of the river? Because you can always come back and cross the opposite direction, but if you're struggling and carrying this thing with you, you know? So there's those different, like, spiritual traditions, I think, woven into this story, which is a lovely thing. Of course, the counterpoint to that is, like, if you're a dishwasher, and your role in life is to be a dishwasher, and you have no real desire to move beyond that, you found contentment there, are you allowed to be spiritually frowned upon for continuing to be a dishwasher?
No, I think that isn't that you're imposing that frowning upon, because if I'm just going to defend Coelho and the Alchemist here,
by all means,
they make a point to say there's nothing bad, and there's actually something good in this life.
Yeah.
But that doesn't have to be your excuse to stay there. Yeah. So it's a choice. It's always a choice.
And I think that is something that this particular book, and maybe this particular author, comes under unfair scrutiny for, is saying that, like, well, if there's this personal legend that everybody is supposed to be following, and it's about finding their treasure, this, like, this giant, you know, castle on a hill, and that's where you're moving towards, well, what about the people who are forever going to work a 9-to-5 and do this and that? And I really don't think that that's fair necessarily. Okay. Like, I do think that it's a valid counterpoint to some of what Coelho is saying in the book. But at the same time, if you expand your worldview and you understand that, you know, this idea of a personal legend can be played out in any place. It almost makes you sound like an asshole if you're saying, like, well, you can only be living your personal legend if you're, like, riding some white stallion into some great battle. No, you can live your personal legend as a grunt worker, a ditch digger, a 9-to-5 worker, 100%. A whatever. And if that's where you are going to find your bliss, then that's where you're going to be. And even if it's not where you find your bliss, but you find some greater calling, if it's serving your family or if it's, you know, like,
I think that's the key. Cause even people take issue with this whole finding your bliss thing. What does that mean? Like, you can't be satisfied with a simple life or a simple job. I do take a little bit of issue with the idea of this personal legend leading to a treasure. And I think the book is super simple. It is a very heavy-handed metaphor. And I think, though, treasure to us means money or material success or something like that. And I think that's the hang-up I would have with it, is say I don't think it's healthy to think treasure equals, as it does in the book, actual gold coins. I think we need to take that with a more figurative eye in terms of treasure. And
well, one might think of it, and this is not something that we discussed in our pregame, but
he's spitballing.
Mrs. Guess and I have been rewatching The Office.
Okay.
And from start to finish.
I am not surprised.
One might think of it as a Dwight versus Jim conversation.
Oh,
right?
Dear.
So Jim, if you've ever watched The Office,
oh my gosh,
he sees Dunder Mifflin as a stepping stone, right? Like, it's not his forever job. And yet he finds his treasure there. Whereas Dwight, Dunder Mifflin is his treasure.
Yeah.
He will forever be loyal to Michael Scott and the company and whatever.
I feel like you have dirtied every helpful eighth grader in their reading of The Alchemist. Because now it's like, do you want to be Dwight Schrute? I didn't think so. That's it.
Can I just tell you that that is the most relieving way that I could ever dirty every eighth grader when you say that to me? I was like, oh my God, what have I done?
I don't know. Dwight Schrute's pretty dirty. Guess had a real fear. Guess, is there anything you'd like to tell us? You're on church drugs.
Just like, where is this headed when you tell me about eighth graders?
I think I just, you know, I definitely like view this book with sort of a nostalgic lens, and I get that, but I did want to defend it, and it's in the goodness portion of it. And yet to say, I don't like the treasure talk, especially connected to spiritual things.
Right.
Because I do like, you know, I am at the heart a gospel Christian, and I do not think our treasure is in any kind of gold coinage.
There is a real risk of confuzzling, like, worldly treasure and spiritual treasure. I think Coelho does a noble effort of saying, like, your worldly treasure will not necessarily match up with your spiritual treasure.
Well, he gets all his other treasures first, but he still does get the... So I wouldn't have, you know... I have big issue with the prosperity gospel, as it's called, which I think we're seeing acted out in the modern day politics.
Very intensely,
of how we can treat the other, of how we can treat the poor, which I think to gospel value Christians are very clear teachings, and to others who are more attuned to this prosperity gospel, which says, if you're a good person, God will reward you.
Right. And not just the poor of our own, like, American society, our own, but like... The alien, the global poor.
The refugee.
The refugee, exactly. Like, those are the people who we look at and say, well, really a shame you weren't born in this country, because otherwise you'd be privileged for this prosperity.
If you were just following the Lord like I am, he would rain down gold coins on your head. Like, no. I do not think that's Christianity. And so I always am uncomfortable with the treasure seeking kind of thing, unless you're talking about treasures in motherfucking heaven, which will not be gold.
And so this is part of why when I came to this book at a later stage of life, and I had already read early on in high school, freshman, sophomore year, something like that, I chose off of a big long list of books. It was called The Journey of Ibn Fatuma. I'm about to butcher some Arabic. I already did. But Journey of Ibn Fatuma by Naguib Mahfouz, who is an Egyptian.
I'm surprised you remembered it all.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
I do my research.
Okay.
Because going back to like freshman year of high school would have been,
been a while.
Digging deep. But it is a brilliant book in a lot of ways. It's another short book, which is why I chose it to do my high school book report on.
Guess full circle.
So read The Alchemist and then read this Journey of Ibn Fatima, or reverse the order depending on what you want.
Yeah.
Both of them are short reads. And this story by this Egyptian author is such an interesting spin at the time that I arrived at it. Because there's not, it's one of those books where there's not really a ton of resolution to the story that's been built up. It's very much about the story that is told mm-hmm. at each stage. And I think because I read it at an early point in my life, I've developed more of a tolerance for, like, those books. Like, I know Mrs. Guest, if there's not a resolution to the story, she's like, ah, this is garbage. This TV show, this movie, this book was, horrible. Horrible. And I'm like, oh, I kind of like that it left me not knowing how it ended. And that's from, I mean, I don't know if it all stems from this story that I read. But the idea of life is a journey. And you can't necessarily always set your eyes on the destination. You have to think about all of the different steps that get you there. So by the time that I read The Alchemist many years later, I was kind of like, oh, yeah, like, I know. Like, I get it. Like, personal legend doesn't always get you to the exact spot you anticipated, you know?
And then Paulo Coelho wraps it all up for you.
And then, and then like, he's like, oh, let's
this is cheating.
Yeah, yeah. The epilogue, put a bow on it.
Well, you know, it's all personal preference. I feel like it's like the guilty pleasure, like that tasted good when it all wraps up so nicely at the end. Like, I prefer that, and yet I know that often, like, better stories don't. Yes. So I'm kind of okay either way, but I don't hate it when they get wrapped up.
And he is, for better or worse, wherever you're at, regardless of how much you love or don't love his style or the storyline or whatever, he's a great writer. It's something that you can lose yourself in for a little while.
I think if you're able to sort of, like, watch it or, like, read it like you would watch it like a Disney movie or something, like, go ahead for and suspend your disbelief.
Yes.
Believe in a happy ending, but also, like, it does encourage you to be present in the moment. There's some little wisdom gems dropped in there. I think the deeper spirituality thing is, like, he talks a lot about listening to your heart and to being quiet, which I think is something we are often remiss in.
Yes.
So that, and what we would call in fancy Ignatian talk, like, discernment, like, where's the spirit leading you? This is what they're, what he's talking for about in a very simplified way. So if nothing else, I think it's a good entry point to, like, opening your mind or heart to some of these spiritual things.
And the book involves the main character, Santiago, from Andalusia, south of Spain. But it followed, in terms of Paulo Coelho's story, on the heels of this book that he wrote the year prior, maybe 2 years prior, called The Pilgrimage, that was all about a pilgrimage on the Camino de Santiago, which is actually kind of semi-autobiographical in terms of his own pilgrimage on the Camino de Santiago.
Do you want to give a little shout out to the Camino itself?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Okay.
Buen Camino to anybody out there who's done it or who is thinking about doing it. The Camino de Santiago, if you're not familiar, it's a pilgrimage route that goes actually from various different points. The traditional one goes from the border of Spain and France in the Pyrenees Mountains all the way across northern Spain to Santiago de Compostela. There's also other routes that go from Andalusia all the way up into Santiago. There's a Portuguese route. There's a northern route. There's an English route that's really short because the English can't make it very far. But, yeah, so there's all these different routes, and they descend on Santiago de Compostela, where there's this big cathedral, and there's all the pilgrims that hang out there. And it's just a lovely thing to do. Speaking from experience, you should try it.
It's on my list now after hearing your account. All right.
But he wrote this book about his own experience there that kind of was like, it uses the same very, like, at best thinly veiled spiritual language that you get in the story of The Alchemist. And it arrives at the same place. Like, the journey is really where it's at. The destination is secondary to the journey. And I fully, like, suspend everything else that I think, whether I love it or hate it.
Yeah.
And I feel both ways at different times about The Alchemist. I can 100% endorse that. Like, the journey really is where you're going to find the most interesting characters. It's where you're going to find the most interesting lessons about yourself. You're going to do the most introspection.
Yep.
And the destination is kind of like the cherry on top.
Yeah. And you're on the journey anyway.
Yeah. It's the Amarena in your cocktail.
Okay.
The destination. Yeah. You're welcome.
I'm just going to take a sip, Wally.
You're welcome for
soaking that Amarena.
Diz. Yeah.
Tastes great.
So, Unless you have any other thoughts about The Alchemist, it's time to go into our big box.
Oh, I almost forgot.
Summer questions.
I picked last time.
Okay.
It's your turn to pick, dear guest.
And the question is...
Random question time.
Let's see here. This is really boring for whoever's listening because this is very well folded.
Oh.
Okay. It says... Oh, my goodness. What is your prediction for the United States Church's future, or the global church? I'm guessing this is Catholic Church. For the church in the U.S. or globally, what is your prediction for where it's all headed?
Like, just open-ended. I think, I wonder, this is actually one of my questions.
Okay, so this
I think when I was thinking about it, things might have been happening. Things are always happening.
Some emotions flowing.
This might have not been just... I might have been really mad when I wrote this question.
A glass cage of emotion and I'm going to write this question.
Yeah, what is your prediction for the U.S.? Like, are we surviving or are we not? Basically, why are we doing Church Strong? Like, does this shit, like continue?
Okay.
So, do you have a thought on this? You need a minute.
I think that...
Okay.
My thought for a while has been that, especially given like the priest shortage, that we are headed towards a church that might better resemble what's going on in some of the rural parts of Africa, South America, where this is more of a hope than a prediction, I would say, but if you don't have enough priests to cover masses, then you have one priest that is assigned to go to various different parishes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the spiritual life of a parochial community might actually be strengthened by having the laity be empowered to say, hey, we don't have a priest this week.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to have a priest until a month from now, but we're going to have a celebration. And it's not going to be the strict, formal, rigid mass. But it's going to be a Eucharistic ceremony. Everybody's going to get their cracker at the end. But it's from the last time that the priest rolled through town, right?
Yeah.
So I think that if we are able to embrace the fact that we have a shortage of priests and not be scared by that into just kind of trying to, like, accept anybody who may not meet the psychological standards of priesthood, if you know what I'm getting at.
Or a certain flavor.
Right. Then we can say, hey, here's what's going to happen. You guys are going to get a once-a-month visit instead of a weekly mass. And if you want to show up for that once a month, then that could actually really enhance the flavor of that liturgical celebration and say, hey, this is something that we don't do that often. This is exciting. And I've mentioned this before. I think we do a really terrible job of making Sunday Mass exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunday Mass would be more exciting if it was your monthly Mass instead of weekly Mass. Or if it was something that only happened on holidays or holy days or things like that. So I think do I think that's the future of the church? No. I think we're going to fuck it up entirely.
Okay.
But do I think that that's a utopian version?
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, I think that's a possibility.
I was going to say, I really like this, like, positive spin guess here. And then you just run it back at the end.
That's what happens when I drink too much brown liquor.
Right?
I get very optimistic followed by very pessimistic.
I thought it was interesting that you went to the priest shortage because when I wrote this question, what is your prediction for the U.S. church? And I did then put in parentheses or the global church. But I was thinking U.S. church because, I unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know what, have this exposure to this, like, very extreme group.
Yeah.
Who wants the Latin Mass and wants the
the
pre-Vatican II method. And one of their big, like, I think it's like fake news style, but is like that these traditional parishes get vocations and that they bring people back. And I sincerely believe they just bring all the crazies to one nice little magnetic point.
Yeah.
But it does make you think because we do have a bit of a shortage, and most of the people who I know who are, like, the laity serving in their parishes are not young people.
Yeah.
And it does concern me, and I see the orders and the nuns especially who raised generations and educated people and, man, sacrificed, and they are technically dying out.
Yeah.
And some of these more quote-unquote traditional, which I don't think is the correct term, groups – do have some younger vocations. I don't really know what the numbers are, but that was what was kind of in my head. And, like, what's the prediction? Like, what is our country going to look like? Because even if we do have these masses every once a month or whatever, traveling priests, we're not really a fully rural country. And that hasn't been the U.S. Catholic Church's identity.
Yeah.
And so I just wonder, like, what is the prediction? I don't know that I have a good one, except that I do think it will have to be grassroots, like every other movement we're looking to right now.
Well, I think it's difficult to put a finger on it as an English-speaking, sort of like typical white bread Catholic.
Yep.
Because so much of the proliferation of the Catholic Church in the United States came from immigrant communities that were like absolutely enlivened by the ability to have, or the decision that the mass should be in their own language, right?
Right.
If you go to a lot of parts of the East Coast, you will find parishes that were traditionally the German parish, the Polish parish, the Irish parish. And so, like, it was born of these immigrant communities.
Yeah.
And even though the fact that they're right down the street from each other, when the parishes were founded, they had such different personalities. And now they've turned into redundant communities because they're less than a half a mile from each other and they serve the same purpose in the community. But at the same time, we have immigrant communities that are different than those European immigrants that were the proliferation of the Catholic Church in the United States. So are we willing to embrace our identity as an immigrant church, as a church that welcomes everybody?
Yeah.
My experience has been to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You know, like everybody's excited that there are more Spanish speakers to put some money in the basket. But when it comes down to celebrating a quinceañera in the church,
or it's having more Spanish masses than English masses, considered
to be something that we're willing to do, you know?
Yeah.
And most parishes in the United States will have an English speaking, a native English speaker as the pastor.
Right.
And many times they will pick up Spanish or Vietnamese or Filipino or Tagalog or whatever it's going to be as a second language so that they can serve their community. But they're not a native speaker. They are not of
the people. That's a justice issue, too.
Right.
You know?
That's the job of the associate pastor, to be a native speaker of the secondary language, right?
So I don't have any good answer for this, but I think it's something that was on my mind and probably everybody who cares about the church's status. Right. So that wasn't a very lighthearted random question, but maybe it gives you some food for thought. We would love to hear from our listener or two about what do you think about The Alchemist. Love it, hate it, gonna read it or not, what you think read about
it. Don't not read it.
Yeah, I guess
it's so short.
Guess wants you to read some new age, you know, God loves
it's
you.
So short.
Close your eyes and wish.
Honestly.
No, it's really good, guys. It's so fun. Just read it.
It's gonna take you less time than like the iTunes or Amazon user agreement.
Listen, so if you're reading all the books this summer, we're throwing you a few shorties because we're gonna hit you with some big, heavy books coming in the lineup. Yeah. So,
speaking of larger books coming down the line, our next week's episode will focus on
Good Omens.
Good Omens.
If we weren't heretical yet, we certainly will be next week.
It's so good. It's one of our favorites, Neil Gaiman, but so also good. Partnering with Terry Pratchett, who is a brilliant and hilarious author in his own right. And it's not a short read.
Nope.
But it's also
you'll
not
barely
like super
notice.
Long.
It's so great.
You'll buzz through it because it's an easy read. It's a fun read and it's brilliant.
It's British.
Heretical. It's British. It's lovely.
So, yeah. So tell us what you think about any of these things. What's your prediction for the church? You could email us at churchdrunk@gmail.com.
Tweet me.
Tweet a guest.
At churchdrunkpod.
You can read the whole list on the blog and decide what you will or will not partake in along with us at churchdrunk.com.
Yep. And we'll be back next week with Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett.
Pretty excited for that.
Pause now. Read it. Pick us up whenever you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And we will look forward to you listening to us next time.
On Church Drunk.
On Church Drunk.
Where our personal legend involves
Turning booze into gold. Is that what it was?
Podcasts.
Oh, podcasts. Turning booze into podcasts that are made of gold.
Whatever.
Cheers.
Salute.